The Lansing Symphony Orchestra closes out its regular season with an unusual Wednesday night concert tomorrow. Joining us with more about the concert, current state's Melissa Benmark. Hi, Melissa.
Hey, Mark. I don't think there's any boomerang music, actually, on the program tomorrow night. But but a number of interesting things. Brahms' Final Symphony, what has been described as a near-viral modern composition in terms of popularity, and a piano concerto played by Andrew Hsu. He's a Gilmore Young Artist Competition winner, and yesterday I talked to LSO conductor Timothy Muffet about the soloist and the music.
We're very proud of our association with the Gilmore Competition. The Gilmore is one of the major piano competitions in the world, and it's right here in Michigan, and so it's wonderful for the Lansing Symphony to have our affiliation. And part of what we do is we promise the Gilmore that we'll present their winners. But by the time when we go to press with our season, we don't know who that winner is. So, but what we do know is that winner is going to be extraordinary, because they always are. So we had published our season, and it wasn't until the fall that we found out that it was Andrew Hsu. And then at that point, I work out the repertoire with the artist. Because especially, you know, these are young and up-and-coming people, so it's, we can't really make a decision on repertoire and then say, well, you're going to play it. We want to do things that are really, that the artist is comfortable with as well.
So the Schumann Piano Concerto in A, where does that sort of stand in the world of piano literature?
The Schumann is part of the standard repertoire for pianists, and I really like it on this program because I love the Schumann and Brahms pairing. That strong personal connection between Brahms, the younger composer of the two, and Robert Schumann, and then of course Clara Schumann as well, and the three of them together. But the there's a great stylistic link between Schumann and Brahms that I think really makes them work nicely on the program. Schumann was in a way the bridge. Probably the two strongest influences on Brahms' music would be Beethoven and Schumann. And then there was, of course, he had a great fascination with the gypsy culture, which appears in a lot of his music as well, even in some of the most highly refined musical utterances. There's still a little bit of gypsy in there. But I think there's just a great connection between the two, and they fit nicely together. The Schumann Concerto is quintessential first-generation romanticism in many ways, and really brings out Schumann's melodic gift and his wonderful sense of pianism, and it's a lovely concerto.
I wanted to back up a little bit and talk about the piece of music that you're starting with. It's called Rainbow Body, and not sure a lot of our listeners have necessarily heard of it. Tell us a little bit about that and about the composer.
Rainbow Body is a work by a living American composer named Christopher Theofanidis, and it's been really quite a phenomenon on concert stages across this country since it was written in 2000. So it's 14 years old now. But it's been just remarkably well received by audiences every time. It's a very uplifting piece of music, and it has its roots in it has spiritual roots in two ways. The idea of rainbow body comes from the Tibetan Buddhist notion that when a person dies, that the soul is turned into energy, and the energy is absorbed by the universe, and so there's this sense of uplifting and of renewal in the energy of the formerly living person, and a new life. And so this is where the rainbow body idea comes from. The other kind of spiritual side of it is that the melodic material comes from some medieval chant. And I think that sense comes across very strongly in the music, that there's something very spiritual about the primary musical ideas. Interesting the way he writes the piece, too, that he writes in, of course, when we hear medieval chant, we're accustomed to hearing it in a massive cathedral, so there's this extraordinary reverberation and almost blurring together of the pitches. And the composer writes that into the music. So when the first note of the melody, one voice will continue to sustain that note while the next voice moves to the next note of the melody. And so there's this built-in cathedral-like reverberation in the music that's really an extraordinary effect. The composer just nailed it. And even musicians in the orchestra they're thinking, what is that effect? What is happening here? Is there, I had a violinist say, was the vibraphone playing along with us, you know, and creating that effect? Was there some percussion instrument? And it's just the way it's just the way it's written. It's really an amazing effect. But I have to tell you, there, if there was ever an equivalent of a work going viral in orchestral music, it's been this one. This has been just a total smash hit. And for great reason. It's a very powerful and uplifting piece.
And finally, you'll be doing the Brahms Symphony No. 4. And listening to it on the way into this interview, I was just struck by how, in some ways, it seemed very, very Beethovenian. And what it really reminded me of was Elgar, a little bit later composer. There's just such a richness to it. Talk about what it's like emotionally to take on this particular symphony.
Well, that's interesting, the Elgar connection. I can see that. I've not made it before, but I can see that connection. The Brahms symphonies are, and I probably even said this before when you and I have talked about Brahms, they to me are kind of like the Parthenon, you know, that they have this sense, even though we know they were written by a man who got up in the morning and ate breakfast and combed his hair, but they are so sublime and so remarkably flawless that it's hard to imagine that there was a time when they didn't exist. It's hard to imagine that they're the work of a mortal. To me, there are not many pieces of music, or certainly bodies of music, as we would say in the case of Brahms, because most of his music falls into that category of just sheer perfection. And so for all of us, I think for the listener, for the performer, the opportunity to embrace a Brahms symphony is one that we take with great reverence, and there's also a little bit of intimidation, even for those of us that have done these symphonies many times. When you come back to one of these works, that it really is, you feel like you've been entrusted with an enormous responsibility. And, I mean, I feel that way about every piece of music I do, but the responsibility is cranked up a bit when you work with the music of Brahms.
Well, that makes a lot of sense in light of Brahms really feeling like he needed to, like he was under great responsibility to carry on the tradition of Beethoven in terms of symphony writing.
That's exactly right. And, I mean, you know, Beethoven, I wouldn't say those things about Beethoven. Now, Beethoven obviously was an extraordinary composer and a revolutionary composer, but there's sometimes patchiness in Beethoven, and maybe not in the string quartets. Those are flawless, but even in some of his other works, there you can see the humanness in it. And in Brahms, I don't ever find that. I just find this unbelievable, almost divine-like creation.
So just in the couple seconds we have left, what are your musical plans for this summer?
Well, this summer I'll be going back to the Chautauqua Institution. which is always an exciting time for me and my family. And my wife will be going with me, and my children will be there. And it's a time of very intense work, concerts and rehearsals almost every day. But in the same way, it's a very renewing experience each time.
Timothy Muffet, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
For Current State, I'm Melissa Benmark.